Blog Talk Radio.
The Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. Call in at 646-716-8652. And don't forget to push 1. Broadcasting from the southern plains of the greater Midwest in Kansas City, overlooking the beautiful Kaw River Valley in lovely Wyandotte County, Kansas, and occupied Osage Indian Territory. So greetings, ex-prisoners, partisans, communards, brigadiers, and lumpen proletariat. This is the Prison Abolitionist Hour podcast, celebrating 370 years of anti-capitalist thought through reasoning and rebellion. It's January 27th, 2024, 4 months and a week until May Day. In December, we talked about the death of Ed Meade from the George Jackson Brigade. This week, we're going to continue the story of the legacy of Mark Cook at the IWOC Conference in 2023 in Seattle and the process of organizing the first Black Panther Party chapter in a U.S. prison. At the forefront of what we know as black anarchism today, as a seasoned activist, Mark Cook began his formal training in education to develop a free education school for poor and black communities in the United States, a class-based education which was always considered radical in the 20th century. Programs such as the free lunch program, free medical clinics, and free education is essential to building dual power, class solidarity, and class consciousness. By the mid-60s, before it was realized there was a COINTEL program targeting the Black Panther Party, communist orgs around the globe began to organize armed militant factions. When large-scale killings and civil unrest primarily targeting members of the Communist Party inside Indonesia, other affected groups included alleged communist sympathizers, Gerwani women, trade unionists, ethnic Japanese Abangan, ethnic Chinese atheists, so-called unbelievers, and alleged leftists in general. According to the most widely publicized estimates, at least 500,000 to 1.2 million people were killed in 1965-1966 in Indonesia, with estimates going as high as 3 million workers. The atrocities sometimes described as genocide or politicide were instigated by the Indonesian army under Suharto. Research and declassified documents demonstrate the Indonesian authorities received support from foreign countries such as the United States and the United Kingdom. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas, the voice of Kansas. I'm your host, Carl G. And now, Mark Cook.
Try and focus on, both inside and outside of prison, the steps I went through. Now, it's kind of old school. Prisons have changed since then, and even if they change, they're all different anyway. They're all different. You got to figure out who you're dealing with and who's working against you. While I was in county jail before I got to prison, a buddy of mine saw something on TV. It was a Black Panther Party with guns. This is in Sacramento, I believe. In Sacramento with rifles, you know. And they were saying that they had the right to carry guns, and they're going to keep the police in line within the Panthers. When I was in jail, like I said at the time, so when me and my buddy got to Walla Walla, which is the state penitentiary, he suggested we start a Panther Party there. And I said, well, you know, we'll be challenging the Nazis, the Klan, and people like that in here. There's no other black group here at all. And he says, I know, you got to get enough to do it. He said, yeah, give it a try. And I said, but it's going to have to, it also has to be undercover. It can't be above board like they are. And so we got about 22 black prisoners together and gave them the spiel, told them we wanted to start the Panther Party inside of the prison. Next, we wrote to Oakland, California, where the headquarters of the Black Panthers were, and asked them for permission to start a chapter within the prison. And they said, yeah. Now, the warden and nobody else knows about it, just us, a handful of black prisoners in Walmart, about 22, like I say. And so we sit up and we start off with the 10-point program. That's what we're going to concentrate on. That's going to be our organizing platform. And within the prison, because we can't carry guns or nothing like that, we made got four rules. No drugs, not when you're doing business, no drugs, alcohol, no violence, and no apathy. When you have a mission, carry that mission out. So the only four rules, these are internal rules. There was also a poem by a guy named Ulysses, who lived next to George Jackson. And he wrote this poem, and we took it as a kind of an oath for our group. And it was, if ever I should break my stride or fall with my comrades' side, this oath will kill me. If ever my word should prove untrue, should I betray the many or the few, this oath shall kill me. And if ever I show fear before the hangman, this oath shall surely kill me. And so, in a sense, this is our commitment to be Panthers within the prison.
Let's run.
know who in the group let it out, but the warden heard about this. Superintendent heard about it. And he called me up, and he told me there's going to be no Black Panthers, no underground in this institution. And I said, well, a community is how communities working outside trying to do things that the government won't do for them. You know, we're trying to do for education, healthcare, schooling for kids before they go to preschool. And anyways, he said, well, that's the way it's going to be. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you guys an office in this abandoned warehouse. It was an abandoned powerhouse. And we said, you're going to let us? Yeah, but it's not going to be underground. I want to know everything you guys do. It was cool. It's all above board anyway. And so that was a thing that kind of politicized me, energized me. Said, I have a plan I can live by. While I'm in prison, I got 260 years to do so. So it keeps me busy and be positive. So I became the Minister of Education. He became the Captain of the Panthers. My partner, he called him Junebug. So June became the captain. To start off teaching the Panthers, I had to think of a little red book. You might have seen it when he was in grade school. This is old school. A lot of people never seen some of the books that I've seen. But it was just a little book that told about a chicken and her little chicks and how she had a little struggle within the farm in growing his corn, planting it. And she always asked the other animals, would they help? And they said no, but the little chicks would always help. And near the end, came time to cook the cornbread. She says, I'm going to cook this cornbread. Who wants to help me? The little chicken would. And who wants to help me eat it? And everybody said, well, we do. And he said, no, you didn't do no work. So the little chicks and the hen ate it. So it's kind of a short socialist concept that you have to work together, commit yourself together, and you're going to gain in the end. Okay. Now, it's just an open to how I trained Panthers inside. I taught them how a struggle can fail. Animal Farm, if anybody's read that, and it was started off great, but it ended up pretty bad. And why did it fall apart? And we have to know these things in order to struggle within this institution, because we may fail. We may fail. We'll fail if we do the same things that these others do. Don't let anybody lay in the weeds, claiming they're helping us, and then turning the whole thing over. Some Canadian prisoners, there's a lot of, I don't call them immigrants, a lot of Canadians have come over the border at that time. We're in Washington State, so there's some Canadian prisoners in the institution. And they have this idea of starting a newspaper, an underground newspaper. And he came to me and said, you're the only one we really trust, and there's only going to be six of us doing this. And if you want to commit yourself, say so. If not, get out. But nobody else. You haven't got any friends. Nobody else is going to know about this. And so I'm one Black, there's two Canadians, one American out of Richland, there's a Native American, Robert, he's the president of the, Inmate Advisory Council. And I think that's about it. But anyways, their idea was to create this newspaper with my machine based on what they read in a book. It was a Second World War prisoners had done this in order to make identification to escape from the German camps.
Whoa, whoa.
Gravy, and it was clear gelatin, and we needed a something to boil this water for the gelatin. So each was given a task, and finally there was let's get to the gelatin. We did the gelatin. We made the machine to boil the water in our cell. Now all of this stuff had to be made, so if a guard came along, we could dump it, and they wouldn't know we had anything going. One was doing an arts craft, and he had glass mirrors. So he cut a mirror about the size of a regular typing paper nowadays, and framed it with wood and masking tape. And we boiled that gelatin and poured it on this frame. And when it cooled, it was just like Jell-O. We got a typing paper from a mimeograph machine and reversed it. And we typed up our little messages on this and tore the paper off and laid the paper on the gelatin, smoothed it down. The gelatin absorbed that ink off the paper. And then we peel it off. Then we just take blank paper and lay it on top, smooth it down, and peel that off. And we did that until it disappeared. And we flipped that gelatin over and do the same thing again. So we're going to reach 17% of the population, and we know once something got started that they weren't supposed to talk about it spread fast. So we're relying on that. So that was the beginning of our underground, to change what's happening in the institution. There was a commonality among all prisoners, but there was also this, the aggravation or squabbling between prisoners, whether it was, the white against black or clan against the Nazis or whatever's going on. But we all have certain things in common, simple things that are in common that the administration did not want us to do. We weren't allowed to have long hair, beards, mustaches, sideburns, none of that. In the summertime when it got hot, we called it a hot box in Walla Walla. It got really hot inside of those walls. But the prison administration said, keep your shirt tails tucked in at all times. So, of course, we'd want them out. So we conned them in this newspaper, told them in the newspaper, if you care, grow hair. And that was one of the models that we spread up among the prisoners, and all the prisoners agreed, yeah, we're gonna grow hair and change this institution. We had a plan, like I said, six of us had this plan, and we had to push it until something broke. And we were hoping that it'd break in our favor. And now this isn't really fair. We had one guy working with us who was in for a second degree murder. He's a youngster, and we wanted to get him out of the prison. Now this is the Washington State Penitentiary. So while we were doing this, we said, well, we're gonna get Wayne out of here. His name is Wayne Roberts. So among us, we said, it's gonna do this resident governmental consult That's what it sounds like. So it sounds good to everybody, a resident governmental consul. But it, what it's really saying is, Roberts goes to Canada. Neither this paper or this motto was ever known by anybody in the institution. I think I was the first one who blabbed it, and that was about 60 years after it happened. People, the wardens and the guards never knew how we printed that newspaper. But anyway, we got to put enough stuff in there. We had rumors about how guards were doing what do you call that? Sleeping with other guys' guards' girlfriend and stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, it got them kind of pissed off. They got the newspaper too. We'd accidentally dropped it under control, and they pick up. They find out what's going on among themselves, and guards were quitting, and you know, there's a lot of disturbance. We had them divided, so we didn't really have to worry about them. We just worried about the prisoners.
The Almighty God has not come as a lamb to slaughter anymore. So the kings of kings and the lords of lords conquer and conquer. So it is no time for an eye to unite and no an eye to fail. Selah. Kingdom of Babylon must break down, just like the walls of Jericho. Yes, Jericho. Just like the days of King Pharaoh, Christ was for us. Yes, this I know about Jericho.
While we were doing this, there was a time when blacks had the right to choose a movie like everybody else. Each group had the right to choose a movie to be shown in the public auditorium. And this one movie came in, it was called 100 rifles. It was Jim Brown and Racco Welch, I think it was. And the Klan and the Nazis said, no, we're not going to show that in this prison. You know, we don't roll that way. And we said, well, if you don't, we're not coming out of this prison. We're going to stay locked up in work time, and you guys can do all the work you want to do. We're not coming out. And so we had all the black prisoners locked down. And so the first day went, and nobody went to work. Everybody went to work except the black prisoners. They came back, and the second day, it was time to go to work. Everybody went to work except the black prisoners. And finally, the black prisoners came back and said, no, we're as hard as you are. We're going to quit, too. We're not going to go to work either. So everybody, the prison is locked down behind the movie. Of course, you know, it's really a silly argument, but it's the way people think in prison. They're divided about any way they can to have an egocentric, have something they have that they don't want nobody else to have, et cetera. Well, the warden is trying to break our strike, and they took these two people who are running the prison inmate advisory council. One was the president and the vice president. Jim Robert, who was one, his brother that wounded knee. I don't know if anybody remembers that struggle.
Bob Robidoux
was it. Yeah. Wounded knee. His cousin was Jim Robidoux. He was a vice president in our inmate advisory council. Another guy, Don Cole, he's a big white guy. He was in that too. So the warden said, took them guys out and put them in the federal penitentiary. Took them away from the Washington State Penitentiary and put them in the federal penitentiary on McNeil Island. And says, they're not coming out until you guys break this strike. And said, we're not breaking this strike. So I don't know how long it went until the warden, not the warden, but somebody, the governor told the superintendent, do something down there. We're not going to keep these guys in the federal penitentiary. And so he said, just tell them to write some kind of memorandum of what they want. And so we wrote this memorandum. And it wasn't really a memorandum. It's kind of a constitution saying what we wanted. We wanted, in a sense, the best part of the penitentiary. We wanted to have this, that, the other, shooting for the moon. And he said, well, send it to the population and see how they take to it. If they agree to it, we'll send them the prisoners back from McNeil Island. So the first one, I think it was he was the director of prisons in the capital, state capital. And he's the one that told the superintendent what to do. The superintendent said, well, this is what they wrote. They said, well, no, you can't give them guys that. They're not going to run in my penitentiary. Mm-hmm. They said, well, send them back to them and have them write another one. And so we wrote another one. It was a little bit better. They didn't know exactly who was writing it. They sent it to the inmate advisory council, find some people to do it. And just by chance, the underground group, we called this Delta Bomb, that was the name of the little newspaper, we showed up. We said, we'll write it for you. And so we were doing this number. We were writing for it. And we wrote it, like I said, then we wrote it, and so we gave all the power right back to the administration that that's what the paper says. And we're going to vote on this. And if you don't like it, we're going to take it in front of the mess hall and burn it. So they had let us out of our shell at this point. And so... in front of the mess hall, they started throwing these papers, and somebody didn't lit them, and that was lit them on fire. So we told the administration they don't want that. Well, give you one more chance to write one. So we wrote what is to be known as the 50-50 program. Prison ran half, the staff ran half. We did the recreations and education part, and they did the custody and security and all the other part. And this is the first time anything like this happened in the state of Washington. And the superintendent says, okay, I'll do this. He had this saying about the only way to make progress is like the turtle. To make a step forward, you got to stick your neck out. And so, in a sense, that's what he was doing. He's going to take a chance. Rather than just quit his job, he's going to take a chance. And we put this those documents we wrote into a constitution, and it was voted on by the prisoners, went through a process that he was like. And so we got out of our cells. And we created what we call the resident governmental council, what they think was a resident governmental council. And the first person we picked as a president was a guy named Roberts, Wayne Roberts, the Canadian. So he had the power to go anywhere in the institution when there's a grievance, you know, and they'd talk to him, he'd bring him back to committee, and we'd settle it. So he was also had the power to go outside of the prison wall down to the minimum security camp. And so he'd go out, go down there, and get the grievances to come back. And so things were running smooth, and he'd go out there, our president, Wayne Roberts, he'd go down there and talk to the guys outside. He'd come back, go down, come back a couple days. One day he goes out, he never comes down. So Wayne, he escapes and goes to Canada. Okay. But he's busted up in Canada, and they will not extradite him back into the United States. It stays that way. And he gets a job up there running spaghetti factories or something.
So this is no time for an eye to unite and no eye to see love.
Still operating underground, the bomb group. We still put out a newsletter about once a month, and they're still trying to find it. They locked up the Ditto machine. They locked up the Ditto fluids. They searched all the cells. Every time they came around where we had our stuff, which is mostly the mimeograph paper, we just throw it in the garbage or flush the jello down the toilet. They couldn't find nothing. And so that was a thing that we led the prisoners to. That was their guide. It was an underground group telling them what to do in prison. We told about how the warden was taking away money from the prisoners. Prisoners give blood. They're allowed to give blood. And they're supposed to get, was it about $15 back per tank? Not per tank, but you know, per shot. But they're only getting five. The rest went to the warden's wife. Another time, the warden had this horse walker made. And we had lots of animals down there at the time. We did farming and stuff like that, all this change. So we did farming. And we take care of, wanted to build a horse walker for the warden. They did that. And that was taken out of prisoners' inmate fund. You heard about people robbing the inmate fund. So this is one of those things. There's this brand new set of drums they gave to the musical department for the prisoners inside the wall. Well, the warden kept those for his daughter and gave the old set to us. And we dug around and found that. We put all this stuff in our newsletter. And it's pretty much the guys are ready to roll, you know. And so we started giving kind of demands or requests to the superintendent. And finally it came to a point where we wanted to have our own living quarters, separate from prison. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to have people who would live by that, those four provisions I made for the Panthers. Now this is, it was an all Black Panther project. I was the only Black in the underground. But I was shooting for what I did control above ground. Because if I needed some help to get something going, those guys would step in. It's, we said we're a place for 16 prisoners and 16 cells. We told them where we wanted it, above the death row. They had a tier that nobody ever used before. So they gave us that place to build a little, have a project, a working project. And we had to turn out our own product on it. And so we decided we'd turn out the jewelry boxes with glass mirrors in the frame. But anyways, so they gave us this place, and it was called a family group. We got a group from downtown that came up and helped us with a kind of a therapy group to get us all on the same page.
I've got a dead
Remember the name of the therapy they used, but it was a heavy, heavy therapy, and they needed a volunteer. I was the first one to step in as a volunteer. They wanted me to tell them something that happened to me in my life that was devastating to me, if I could remember it, and tell it to them from my guts. So I started to tell them a story about when I was beat up and tortured within the mental institution when I was about 18. And they said, no, don't just tell a story. Tell us how you felt when all this was happening. And boy, it was heavy for me. I did tell them.
I think I'm a bomb. Is it with the arms of me again? Is it different style, different fashion? No? Tell me, say one thing, Nancy, can't understand. One thing, Nancy, can't understand. One thing, they might talk about me, ambition. Say one thing, they might talk about me, ambition. Come and say some of them ask me where me get it from. Say some of them ask me where me get it from. I told them, no, it's from creation. I told them, no, it's from creation. Bam, bam, hey, yo. What? 3 million. So bomb, bomb, they want some bomb, 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 who was a bum bum bum, he bum 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 bum, he bum 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 bum. Who was a bum bum bum, hey, tell me some was a bum bum bum. This woman, I never trouble no more. I'm a lady, I'm not a man.
And I was tortured there. They put me in a straitjacket like this. They chained my feet to the bottom of a bed. Now I'm just pretty much a kid, like I said, 18 or so. And they laid me on this bed. They ran a sheet tied up to one side, ran it under my arm, behind my neck, down here, and tied it to the other sheet. Then they pulled tight and raised me up off the bed, and they beat on me. And, of course, it was painful, and I screamed, and I hollered. I remember that really clear. I'm not telling it the way I told it before, because I kind of don't want to remember, but I try to get over it. Anyways, I told that story, and in the end, they sat me on this blanket, and everybody just picked the blanket up and raised them above their heads and held me up there, and just lowered it down. And they told me to look out. Look up, and I wouldn't do it because that had got to me. I didn't think I could really tell that story again.
Tell her try your best just to make it quick. For my 10 to the 6. Cause there must be something she can do. This heart is broken in two. Tell her it's a case of emergency. There's a patient by the name of Gregory. Clock. but there's no prescription for me. She's the one, the only remedy. Night nurse, only you alone can quench this your thirst.
Underwater love, the way I righteous one. Moses crossed the Red Sea with a rod and iron man.
To me in the penitentiary, but anyways, I'll get back. But when I looked up, everybody around me was crying. Even the therapist, psychologist, came up to show us this technique. No, I'm good. I'm really sorry about this part of it. I just wanted to know you. What we did to the other prisoners in this group, they had to go through the same thing. Because we wanted it, it's called behavioral therapy, something like that.
You said it was Gestalt therapy.
That's what it was called at the time. I never heard of it before, and it was working. It was getting everybody in on one page. Everybody was going to do exactly as we said. They're going to follow those four rules. They were the keep this thing clean, break no rules, and mess this program up. Because the people we put in that program were going to have 15 years or more. We didn't let nobody else in that program. Because we're there for the duration. And not to mention Wayne Roberts' escape. I mean, we have plans for ourselves, too. after we had that group, we had somebody who came, somebody came up and sat with the group. He was an alcoholic, reupholstered person on the street. And the judge made him do community service. And he came up and he said, well, I can teach these guys my upholstery trade. And he taught us. And we asked for a spot house in the prison industries to set it up. And so we were able to set up that business outside. This is going to be for the prison industries. Yeah, we wanted to work it. We wanted to learn a trade. So they given us this trade. Now this, and it sounds strange, it's a small group. There's about 16 of us learning this thing. We're shooting for the whole institution. And we want to we're going to try and get everybody on the same level. So he taught us how to do reupholstery. And the women had a prison right next to us. They moved them all to a place called Purdy, up in Western Washington. We're down in Eastern Washington. And so we set the total warden. We'd like to have that prison out there for us. We want to set up our business out there away from the prison so there won't be no negative feedback, feeding off of the prison population who were dealing in drugs. And there was no real standard of how they lived, They're going to stay in their gangs. They were going to be, the black nationalists and the Nazis and the Native American circle, whatever, yeah. And so that was given to us. It wasn't given to us. They said, we want that building out there. And the warden said, or I think the warden, they call them superintendents. He said, well, you can't get that. We haven't got no money on our budget for anything like that. You can get it out of your head. And if you can get the money, we'd do something like that. And so we had another Canadian in the population who was fairly smart. I guess he'd been to college or something. And we told him about it. He wouldn't give us the money for it. He said, well, we'll get some money. So he wrote grants for us. This is a prisoner. He's in door inside. And nobody's helping us. So it was the Ford Foundation, the LEA Foundation. It was a thing called a CIA. It wasn't CIA, but it was strict with Correctional Industry, Association. So we wrote them for that. And strange enough, they gave us $250,000. Okay, but 16 prisoners, that was ours. It didn't belong, wouldn't go to the administration. They said the prisoners have to administrate this whole program. You give them the facilities for them to work in and let them go, and they have 2 years to put their program together, whatever it's going to be. And so we got the women, eventually got the women's quarters outside, and we were out there living. There was no locked doors. We're all doing 15 years or more. There's several guys, and there were life sentences in our group. And I, of course, pulled in some of my Panton officers with us, me and the captain. And there was no locks on the doors out there. Inside, we had the prison wall, the whole work that a security prison had. And we promised, it was a promise, yeah. We gave them a word, nobody's going to do anything, try to escape or anything like that. We're going to keep it clean. If one does it, we all go come back in, and there was no escape, no escape attempts. While we're in there, of course, I still had to do Panther duties inside. And the Panthers from Seattle wanted to do a sickle cell anemia on all the prisoners in the penitentiary. And so we would have to go in and meet them, and we met them and all that. And unfortunately, I told you about where two of my Panthers got involved. One of the Panthers came down. At that time he didn't commit suicide, but later on he did.
Fire starts putting down a water hole. What a sad sight. The blood starts running and the fire starts burning. And what a day tonight. Them just to back them up and dash them away. What a day tonight. Oh! Oh!
back them up, then dash them away. It was a sad time. Tel Aviv went south and gone a walk. It was a massacre. The blood starts running and the fire needs burn. It was a sad time. Southman's gone a while. Oh, what a hastening. The fire starts burning down a water hole. It was a sacred fire. The fire just a burn and the blood starts running. Oh, what a hastening. Them just a back them up. Back them up, then dash them away. It was a sacred fire. Tel Aviv and Southman gone a while. It was a massacre. Because the blood did run and the fire did burn. It was a sacred sight.
But that was my first connection with the Panthers, and that was strange, really strange. They looked me in the eye, they knew who I was. But anyways, while this program is running, we had a van and a station wagon to do business outside of the prison grounds, pick up materials from the various colleges and the military installations around there. Anything that was a government facility, we bring the furniture in and repair it. Under the guidance of this guy who taught us how to do repair furniture. Well, there's a governor, his name was Dan Evans of the state. He came down and he's looking at our program. He heard it was going on. He didn't believe it, so he had to come down and see it. And we were just doing our thing, and the Canadian who wrote the grants, he always tried to act like a mayor or something, running things. And the superintendent's on him all the time. He'd been ordering things from downtown, dishes and stuff. And the superintendent made him send them back. You can't do that. This is our money. And they said, okay, he does what he wants to do. Anyways, the governor came down, and he's touring our little shop in living places. And Roger, the Canadian, he pointed to me, and he said, told the governor, this is the guy who started all this stuff, and he should be out of here. And now I got a mandatory 15-year sentence. It was mandatory before I could even think about getting out. And the governor told the superintendent, get him to Seattle. The next day they attacked me up, put me in the back of a little convertible with two other people, and drove me to Seattle to a halfway house, and dumped me there.
You can't say school books never taught us anything about flow chart.
The truth,
a definite intention to hide the truth. So tell the youth the truth.
Tell the youth the truth.
And let them know their role.
House, they had no idea who I was. Okay, no idea. And I'm wondering what the heck. I mean, this is the best chance a guy has to escape, you know. 15 mandatory sentence. I haven't even got started on. I got about maybe 5 or 6 years, you know. So I stayed in that halfway house for about 1 year. I'm skipping a whole lot of stuff in between, you know. So, but anyways, I was going to school. They had me in school doing college grant. So I was signed up for 2 years. After I did that, I had a 2-hour lead time between school and getting back to the halfway house. So in that time, I wandered around Seattle looking for the Panthers. I found the Panther headquarters. It was empty. There were two people there. I wondered where everybody else was. He told me they're in California. They're doing a security guard for Elaine Brown. How much time have I got left?
We have 6 minutes
left.
We want to skip
the
break.
Okay. Well, I'll cut. There's a lot more to it. But anyways, while I was out, I went to all these groups. I found the prisoners. I found the prisoners union. I found the women out now. There's a little bit, we call it the house on 10th Street, where some women who are running a prisoners group for the women at Purdy, they go out there and take the kids out there to the mothers, et cetera. And they got me snagged in with them. I did that kind of stuff. And there was a newsletter by a prison group similar to IWOP. They did a newsletter called Sunfighter. It was going into Monroe, and it unionized the people inside of Monroe. Okay, so these are the type of stuff I was doing. And meanwhile, I was setting up a convention for one convention each year. It's called Convention 72. We're trying to get the rights of prisoners recognized, the right to vote, and the right to be a free labor group, not slaves, but earning fair wages, et cetera. And as a Panther, I was supposed to be looking for housing for them and jobs for them when they got out. But I'm still in a halfway house. I'm still doing time. Well, eventually, they did parole me. And each year I did one of these conventions, and I'm constantly trying to figure out where are the Black Panthers. I know they exist. I met them when they came down, but they didn't show up. And so I'm trying to stay busy. So this is the work I did when I got out. I did some more conventions. I had one right here. I think this is the first place I had a convention. It was upstairs. And that's where I met Ed Mead called me a bourgeois so-and-so, and I said, come on out, I'll give you some time to speak, like you did here, came time to speak, and he hit him with the bourgeois and the proletariat and the lump and this and he would just listen to it. I said, okay, he's cool, he's out.
Mr. DJ Chung, some boy I try to stop winning life. You know, Mr. Rough them up some question in a real life.
Oh yes, it's been happening, and it's still happening, and we don't want no more, boy. No, yes, it's been happening.
Are you serious?
Travel world.
Hey, tell them boy,
we don't want no more.
Anyway, that's the first time I met him. I didn't meet him under the circumstances of George Jackson-Gate. I came much further on. But I'm just telling you how I organized inside, helped organize inside and outside. I didn't tell you everything. Probably some of the, I don't know why I stuck that one thing in there, but I guess I wanted you to understand how sincere we were in doing this kind of work. Yeah. As an underground Panther, I committed myself, you know. But anyway, tied up.
Okay. What I would like to ask is, this has been recorded and it's all nice above ground stuff. Would you like to stop the recording and talk more about any other?
Stop it and burn it. No, I was just kidding. Yeah. Don't leave. I didn't even know it's been recorded. Okay, but that's.
I would really like to hear a little bit about the George Jackson Brigade and the kind of stuff y'all were doing.
Uh huh.
That's my question.
That's all.
No,
well.
You want to keep recording?
You got a program going here, and I won't mess up.
We want to.
Okay. The George Jackson Brigade. Okay.
Sorry, stop the recording.
You want
to stop it? Yeah. Mark, you want some water? Yeah. Sorry. So the term from the river to the sea. Greater Israel, which means Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, that land stretches between the Jordan. I'm sorry, I'm getting an interruption here. The land between the Jordan and the sea. And in fact, for some of the traditional revisionist movement, the right wing of the Zionist Party, meant also across the river, even east of the river, into what is now known as Jordan, Transjordan at the time. So to say that that is an anti-Semitic term or that it calls for the genocide of the Jews is nonsense. It can mean, if you look at it from the point of view of the Israeli right, that Jews have the right to rule over all the land of Israel. And many of the people who are now in Netanyahu's government, the settler right-wing Jewish supremacists such as Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, they would like to rule over all the land, and they would like the Palestinians to go away or to agree to be ruled over by the Jews. Now, it can also mean the opposite. If you look at what Hamas has been saying, it can mean exactly the opposite. Hamas indeed wants to create an Islamic Palestinian state where Jews would either have no room or would have to be living there in much smaller numbers and be tolerated. And so it does not mean what people say unless you ask them, what do they mean? And in that sense, putting these three presidents to answer these questions, to my mind, A, they should have said, look, if you speak about genocide, no one should condone genocide, not of Jews and not of anyone else. If you speak about intifada or about political slogans, you have to explain what they are, how we understand them. But beyond that, I have to say that this whole discussion seems to me to be the least important issue. What is most important is that Israel now has been conducting a war for weeks and weeks in which it has killed thousands and thousands of Palestinians. It has moved them to a very small part of the Gaza Strip. It has destroyed their property and has not even made a commitment to allow them to return, and has been doing that with enormous amounts of American-supplied munitions, not only rockets, but also tank shells, artillery shells, and anti-rocket rockets. And that has to stop, and there has to be a political plan as to how to move to the next day, which is what Netanyahu is refusing to do. This is the main issue, not how we talk about politics on American campuses. That's useful to talk about it, but it's not the main emergency issue right now, to my mind.
Canada man gets tricked. Mama, turn around red. track and the gun to come and shove the youth them at. Earth a run red. Then you all a look now that even. And you're an excuse then. Whoa. Earth a run red. Then you all a look now that even. And you're an excuse then. Yeah. Earth a run red.
And I am part of the Successful Palestine organization shutdown of briefly on a view of a tech bar. I was arrested along with about 25 others, blocking the entrances to the rape camp. I live in Tucson, and I am extremely cognizant of the fact that the place that I live is an epicenter of a genocide economy and a war economy, including places like Raytheon and many, many other corporations that are based here that have deep implications for what it means to live here. And they are the corporations that are directly sending the bombs to Gaza that are killing civilians there. So there's an extremely direct connection, I feel, between my identity as a Jewish diasporic settler on this land and the settlement that is happening in Israel Palestine right now. And I think Raytheon represents one of the most concrete links in that chain and in that in the profiteering off of mass death in Palestine.
I have just come back from Israeli detention. Hi, my name is Ellen Hansen, and I am a human rights activist from Gothenburg, Sweden. Seeing this with my own eyes, experiencing this firsthand, it just makes me more determined to show the world what Israel is doing. We were 12 peace activists on our boat, a small sailing vessel, so 37 nautical miles from Gaza. Around 12 boats approached us. They took over our boat, they confiscated our passports and our personal belongings, they body searched us, they had a medical checkup, and they separated us women from the men. We were then taken into the immigration center. We got security checks over and over again. We were body searched over and over again. And we were threatened to give our fingerprints and our optical scanning. And also they threatened us to sign this document where we agree to the fact that we have illegally entered Israel. I then told them that you have taken me here. I had absolutely no intention to go to Israel. I was on my way to Gaza. If you want to deport me anywhere, you should deport me to Gaza. We sat in prison for 4 days in total with a huge amount of different prison guards, managers, personnel that all lied to us, that all tried to manipulate us to sign this document. And most of the documents, there were documents all the time, most of the documents are in Hebrew. He handcuffed me and brought me very brutally to a bus that was waiting for us outside. We were flown against our will on the morning, early morning on the 8th, and arrived in Stockholm in the afternoon. There's no way to imagine how Palestinians experience their treatment by Israel. And that is why we have to use ourselves, we have to use our tools to change the world, to change how people see reality. We will continue sailing. Nothing is going to keep us back. Israeli occupation force can be ready because we will come again and again and again until the blockade is unconditionally lifted.
That is committed unspeakable atrocities in the world. It is the United States of America. They don't care. They don't care for the human beings. 57 years ago, when Japan was retreating on all fronts, they decided to drop the atom bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Killed a lot of innocent people who are still suffering from the effects of those bombs. Those bombs were not aimed against the Japanese. They were aimed against the Soviet Union to say, look, this is the power that we have. If you dare oppose what we do, this is what is going to happen to you. Because they are so arrogant, they decided to kill innocent people in Japan. Who are they now to pretend that they are the policemen of the world?
No one had dedicated to the United States of America and embassy in Jamaica, you know?
Yeah!
But that's the young way, man!
Yeah, man!
Yeah, me for the work in the young cat, boy, and don't be visa.
Work,
however, folks, thank you for listening. Damn!
It is a visa to travel to the USA. They say that I'm not qualified and I might run off and say,
profit from the war that's being waged, the violence that's being waged on Palestinians. You know, in Iraq, corporations made a killing, off a killing. You know, over 51 congresspeople have over $2.8 million in stock in the top corporations profiting from war. So
should that be legal in your opinion?
No, it shouldn't be illegal. It's a definite conflict of interest that the same politician who passed legislation in order to wage war and to spend our tax dollars on manufacturing weapons are also the same ones that are looking to profit from it.
It's a settler colonial project. And I do think that we are witnessing the beginning of the end of this project because it rests on three pillars. One is material, of course. And there I agree. I mean, when you use an index that looks at sustainability of state according to their material capability, Israel is doing well. And as you mentioned in your introductory remarks, it does well because of the mainly because of the United States. So this is a condition that can change. The second pillar is the social coherence of the settler society. And we know that this coherence is non-existent anymore. There is a bit of an optic illusion because of the Hamas operation on the 7th of October that created a sense of unity, but it's not going to cover up for the fragmentation of the society that we have seen until the 7th of October. It seems that coherence that is based on social coherence, that is based on hatred of the Arabs or the Palestinians, and doesn't have very much anything else in common, is not very sustainable. And more importantly than anything else, of course, there is the legitimacy pillar. Israel enjoys the legitimacy of Western governments or governments in the global north, and therefore there is a sense that it can still be sustainable because of that support of the elites. But it has lost the support of the civil societies. And this is why probably it's the only state in the world that lobbies for its existence, not for its policies, not for its better economic performance, but for its very moral justification, and it's losing that battle. Just a caveat, as an historian, I can tell you that when projects like settler colonialism are reaching their last phase, unfortunately, this can be quite a long period. It doesn't happen in one day or 2 days. And the problem is, of course, that they become more brutal and ruthless, brutal and ruthless, brutal and ruthless, brutal and ruthless.
I can't believe that it happened in my house. They just came ramming in here and arrested me in front of my kids for being anti-Israel, which is wild. But that's what's happening in the UK, guys. You've, and it wasn't even stuff I've said. It's stuff I've reposted. So these weren't even things that I'd actually said. It was stuff that I had reposted on Twitter. They had a big file of. And they were like, you reposted this. And I was like, are we arresting people in the UK for reposting things? And they were like, yeah, we are. Yeah. And I was like, this is wild. And they were like, what have you written here? And I said, well, I've put a, you know, I've reposted this. And I've said, you know, peace be with Palestine or, you know, whatever. And I stand by every word. It was made very clear to me that if I denounced Palestine, if I denounced Hamas, that I would not be charged. But I obviously won't do that. So I'll see them in court in March, I suppose. But that's what happened to me today. I can't believe that it happened in my house.
Yeah.
give you a chance. I walk on part in the war for a Negro in a cage.
under a demonic charm. Under a demonic charm, under a demonic charm, under a rhythm and a chant, what them Babylon a want. If Chacha was the man, they would have the same plan. And if Chacha was the man, they would have had Babylon be said. Well, then they man a every solo bantan. Then they still a lot of all the more bantan. Then they still a big of every revelation. Then they still a big of the investigation. For the rhythm and a chant, yo.
Under the man I charge, yo. Under the man I charge.